listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show. Here's your host, Keith Blakemore Noble.
Hey, welcome back. So glad to have you joining me for another episode. This is going to be an interesting one. There's some very delicate themes that we're covering in here, and they're very important to a large portion of the community. So I'm hoping that we're all going to learn a few useful bits and pieces here. Do stick with us, because my guest today is a gentleman called Andrew Porteous. Now, Andrew is the award-winning coach from the Hyperlites community. His mission is to provide support emotionally, socially, and mentally to every student attending university. I have to say, I really wish there was someone providing the level of service and support that Andrew provides. I really wish there was someone providing that when I was a student at university. I would absolutely have benefited from it. I can think of several ways in which it would have helped. So it's great to have someone who's doing that sort of stuff. That's why I wanted to bring Andrew on the show. He aims to fulfill this by offering coaching, mentoring, and providing workshops with his team of experts. That's my guest today, Andrew Porteous. Hey, Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm all right, Keith. It's nice to be joining you today. This is my first podcast, so I am learning. And if you can't tell from listening, I am from Bristol.
Fantastic. Just thought
I'd get that one out of the way.
You hide it so well. Thank you so much for having this as your first podcast experience. Hopefully it won't put you off. We'll do our best. we've read your, or we've heard your bio. But who is Andrew? Who is the man behind all of this?
So I'm my background, my starting, my story, kind of, it all stems from me living in Bristol. I've lived here all my life. I've gone to school 2 minutes up the road, went to secondary school 15 minutes down the road. And my parents and my life at home was very involved. I'm very much a home person. Like, it's rare for me to go out of the house. I quite like that introverted lifestyle. But back when, if we do go back to primary school, I was your normal chatterbox, energetic little bundle that got in trouble. Well, not in trouble, but in every report, Andrew would do so much better if he stayed focused and didn't chat and didn't distract people. And obviously later on in my story, it makes sense why this was all happening. But yeah, that would be on every report when I was in primary and most of my reports in secondary. But it was kind of that kind of background. Like, so to give transparency, I'm 24, 25 in April. I can't say I have a massive social circle. I have suffered from various things that we'll get into later around mental health and peer-to-peer bullying and such that actually links back to when I was a child. So it was probably around year three. So trying to work that out in age four and five is reception. Six, seven is year one. No, it isn't. Five and six is year one. Six and seven is year two. Seven and eight is year three. So I was about 7, 8 years old. And this new boy came into our year group from a different school. He'd been asked to leave. And I don't know what it was, but obviously he took a disliking to me from day one. Mm. And that's kind of almost where it, not all started, but it's probably a fundamental back there.
Yeah.
Because it was comments about my weight, my image, the way I spoke. Everyone who I meet in networking says that I'm very Bristolian. Everyone in Bristol says I sound posh.
Okay, I get you.
So it's kind of an interesting dynamic when they're like, we know you're from Bristol, and yet everyone in Bristol says you're a bit like posher than a normal Bristolian. So I had that to play around with while I was in school. Mm. And then because I wasn't sporty, I was very mathematical, scientific. I still hate sports to this day. Like my idea of a good sport is going on the Xbox.
There you go.
Like gaming, I don't know if it is fully recognized as a sport, but to me it is. So that's kind of because I didn't engage in football at school and I didn't do rugby. Also, I don't like getting muddy, which now that I know my learning difficulties makes more sense because of the sensory kind of links to it. Because I don't like creams or anything either. I'm very particular in what I, yeah, I'm just a bit different, which didn't help when it came to that. He obviously then came in and made friends with loads of people in school, got them on his side. And it's not a sides thing, but when it's more than one person, it does affect you.
It does. It does. You're right.
Yeah. So that kind of carried on. We went to the same secondary school. So that it meant that from age 8 to when did he leave? Year 9-ish. So I was probably about 13, 14. When he left the school. So a decent chunk of my school time and very impressionable school time was me being told that I was overweight, I was ugly, all these different things. But around year 8 time, so a couple years before I wouldn't say bullying stopped, but the main perpetrator left, my mum's parents passed away. And they were massive in my life. We used to see them weekly because they lived further away. So we used to travel every weekend to go and see them. And they were a lot more involved than my grandparents are still alive. And that affected me. I think I had 3 weeks off school because I was walking in the school, getting in, and people were like, and you know, the common kind of comments like your mum, your nan, your granddad, like they just make one-off comments. And at that time, I just wasn't receptible,
yeah,
or wasn't kind of getting that. And I was just breaking down. Like I would, the first day I went in after they passed away, I ran and hid and they did not find me for a couple hours. And then they just sent me home. So I didn't go in for 3 weeks. I was still doing stuff at home. For me, obviously being at home is a lot more comfortable for me. Mm-hmm. So I live and work in my home and it's just how I do it. And that obviously progressed and obviously both of them passed away. It was 2008, 2009 time or 2009, 2010. So that added into it. And then I got called a wimp because I was crying in school and it just developed. And then GCSE year, it kind of eased slightly because everyone's panicking about GCSEs. I didn't do amazing, but I didn't do badly. I didn't get any A's. And I only got one or two subjects below a D. One was religious studies. Apparently, according to my feedback, I put too much of the religion into it and not enough of my own opinion.
Okay.
Well, that was my phase. That was my, like, do they need to rethink the name of the subject? But even back then, I kind of had this gut feeling that I wanted to help people and I wanted to kind of change things. But back then, didn't know about owning a business, didn't know about coaches and all of that. And all the work you do, Keith, like I could not imagine doing hypnosis. Like it just doesn't compute with my, like, I don't, maybe it's because I've not properly received hypnosis. So I don't,
So you're not,
One day.
maybe we'll sort that for you someday.
Yeah, maybe we need to talk about that too. Like, there's probably something that we can sort out in my life.
Yeah. catch up and demo it over a beer. I find that's often a really good way.
Might be good.
Yeah.
So obviously all this kind of faded somewhat, and then we went into sixth form, and I was managing. I got my qualifications, I applied to uni, and I wanted to be a teacher for years. So back when I was 10, I kind of decided I wanted to be a teacher, because in my mind that was the best way to help people.
Right.
And this does feed into the story. So I set up my GCSEs, my A-levels, and essentially going to uni to become a teacher. So I know a lot of people my age, or people in high school and secondary school and sixth form, they're like, I have no idea what I want to do with my life. And like, I think I was kind of blessed in a way that I had that motivation to want to do that. And it helped because my mum works in schools. So I've seen her work one-to-one with children and see how she helps them progress and how they overcome their learning difficulties because of the work she does with them. So that fed into it a lot. And then obviously I got into university, and I'm quite honest about this. I got into university through clearing.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of my grades didn't show to UCAS straight away. So they thought I'd only got 2 A-levels.
Oh, right.
So I was like mad frantically, like phoning clearing all of results day. And it wasn't until about 5:30 on that Thursday that the uni came back and were like, yeah, we can accept you on your original offer through clearing. And I was like, fine, cool. I'm in uni. I'm done. I got my place. But for me, I didn't want to move away. Because again, I'm quite a home person. I stayed at home quite a lot, and I'd learned to drive. So I wanted to be able to drive. I had a car. I also had a job. So I worked in retail. So I was like, there's no point moving away, having to get a new job, catch the bus, because that sets off my anxiety. I'm not a fan of public transport. And all these like little things, it just made more sense to stay at home. So I went to a uni that was about 14 miles away, did about 4 days a week at uni, and that was what my course was. And I kept my job that brought me £6,000 a year for doing 15 hours a week. Then was volunteering on a day that I wasn't in uni or wasn't in work. Because I've always been heavily involved in the Scout Association. So I've always kind of, I've grown up with it, and now I'm a leader in it. So, and it wasn't until reflecting on it properly that I was like, yeah, no, I'm doing like 7.5 days in 7 days. Like if you really work out the amount of time,
yeah.
I was trying to fit in so much into such a like set amount of time. And I did overdo it, and this is where things started to crop up and highlight. So I guess I always like to say that this is where it could get darker or more sensitive, just to warn any viewers or listeners. So it was around about...
Before we dive into a little bit more detail, just want to say thanks to this episode's sponsor. It's sponsored by another podcast, Newton's Nuggets. It's run by Paul Newton. You may have come across him before. He's been a guest on a couple of our previous episodes. He's also a brilliant magician, and he runs Mental Theft. Check those out as well. But it's run, Newton's Nuggets is run by Paul Newton and Jesse Lawrence. And it's a great little podcast. Newton's Nuggets delves into different aspects of the life of a modern business owner, providing bite-sized nuggets of advice, information, and the stories behind the people who are experiencing the journey to success. I love the podcast. I've been a guest on it a couple of times. I love many of the guests that they have on there. It's a great little podcast. If you like this podcast, you're really going to like... Check it out, newtonsnuggets.com, or you'll find it on iTunes, Spotify, all the best places. Check out Newton's Nuggets, but not before you've listened to the rest of this episode. Now, where were we? Oh, yes.
February 2016. So I was still in first year of uni, which was going all right. I was passing things, and obviously first year of uni, you just have to pass.
Yep.
there's no weight towards your final outcome, which really is off-putting, because you're like, oh, I just have to pass 40%, cool, which doesn't set you up for the right mindset for second and third year, I'll tell you that. But trying to juggle everything and also trying to have a social life and make sure that I'm catching up with the friends that I've met at uni or catching up with the friends that I still had, very few, from school. I think I'm down to one friend properly from secondary school now. And me and her talk regularly. But it was trying to balance all of that as well as make sure that I was doing enough at home to help my mum and dad out and all these different features and factors coming in. And it's like, and it was, I can't remember the day exactly, but I got an email from uni saying a third party has expressed concern for your welfare. And it was around the time that email came through that I planned out my first attempt of taking my life. And it was kind of, it was almost a knee-jerk reaction to that email because I was like, well, if people are noticing it, I need to hide it. I need to stop people seeing it. And that was kind of the retreat that I had. But I didn't. And I always say that the first one was kind of thought and planned. The next one was planned and set up. And then the third one, I almost got to it. And then something caught my attention and stopped me. So between like 2016, 2019, there was three occasions. The first two, I always say, and this is obviously my feelings towards it, I didn't have the guts to do it, which doesn't then help you with your mindset around it when you're trying to like say, oh no, I meant to be here, and it's like, I didn't have the guts to do that though. So I didn't help myself, but from that I got counseling from university, which was all right. Probably the best way to say that. I don't know whether I was fully truthful during the counselling, because they give you six sessions at university, because obviously they've got so many students. Wow. So trying to get 10 therapists to see 7,000 to 8,000 students if they need help, that's limited, especially when they're limited to 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. So yes, I will put my hands up and say I probably lied throughout the sessions to try and get it done and dusted. Because I think I went into that headspace of, well, I don't need this. Someone else needs this. And then you get like through uni, and it wasn't until my last year of university, and to go back a little bit, because of all this that's happened, I did get diagnosed with anxiety and depression. I have been on medication since then. Never reduced the dose. I've been on the max dose since then. Because for me, it helped me be normal or be me, without the kind of major swings of mood. I still have those like mood swings, but they're not as drastic, because I'd kind of go into that very, very low place. It's okay to talk about it. And I think that's one of the things, like a lot of what I do is to open that discussion, to kind of explore things that a lot of people don't talk about. And then it got to 2019. No, it didn't. Got to 2018. And I got diagnosed with ADHD. And this was very, very rare. Not rare, but shocking. That's the correct word. because I had no idea. My mum worked in education. We have lots of friends that are teachers. I'm training to be a teacher at the time. Like, it didn't make sense that it had only been picked up. And it was literally an off-the-cuff comment from one of my lecturers who turned around and said, well, how long have you been diagnosed? And I was like, with what? Because at this point I was like, I have a few, but what do you mean?
Yeah, which particular one?
Yeah, like, I don't know whether it's just, I think when people have labels, they're a lot more jovial around people asking about them.
Yeah.
Because I'm very like jokey about it. Like, oh, which one? Or they're like, oh, which mental health, like, what mental health do you suffer from? And I was like, where do you want to start?
Yeah, have a list.
And I am... Yeah, like, I'm almost self-deprecating with humor.
Yeah.
Because it is a coping mechanism, and yes, I went through a lot. So he turned around and was like, oh, with ADHD, you fit a lot of the traits. And I was like, really? Okay. So I went to my doctor and I filled out a form. The doctor had no idea what the form meant. And told me I had a score of 63 out of 72. It wasn't score-based. It depended where the ticks were, because it was a scale for each question. So they totaled it up completely wrong. But it obviously went to a specialist.
Yeah.
GPs are not educational psychologists, mm-hmm. So it's very different. And... obviously, I got referred, so I went and had my psychiatric evaluation. That was a fun 3 hours. And I got told at the end of it that I was probably one of the easiest adults they've ever diagnosed.
Well, that's nice.
I know. Like, I want to take that as a compliment, because it just means that I present my difficulties easily.
Yeah.
It means that I'm not trying to hide it. And obviously we were talking prior to filming about being yourself and being being the open, honest you. And I was like, at least I'm being me. I'm not hiding anything. But it's an interesting one to kind of... And I know people that have been diagnosed much later in life. And it's... it's such a difference, and I am medicated for it now, because for me, I wanted and needed focus, mm-hmm. and I was like, I'll try the tablets, see if it helps. I now get asked when I'm a bit more hyper, because sometimes I do get hyper still. Mum's like, have you taken your medication today? I'm like, yeah, I'm just excited.
Yeah.
And like, I see a therapist every week anyway now, privately.
Yeah.
And I admitted to her a few weeks ago that I've started to be excited for the future. And for me, that's a massive turning point, because yeah. Obviously depression is kind of that backwards kind of being upset and kind of not liking what's happened in your past. And the anxiety is being fearful or wary of the future.
Yeah.
And at this point, I'm excited for the future. So I'm like, am I fixed? Am I recovered? And I know I'm not. Like, it's not just a flick the switch, you're better. But like, it's progress for me. And it's a highlight on that journey. And I'm sure people that see me back then and see me now, like, I know someone that saw me four or five years ago. Mm-hmm. They've seen me more recently in person, and they've heard me speak at a networking event. And they're like, are you the same person?
Yeah.
Because I was so kind of shy, and which no one would ever believe, let's be honest. Anyone that's met me in networking would not believe that. But I was really, really energetic and bouncy with friends that I knew. And it was people I knew that kind of unlocked that.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I'm with a new group of people, I'm like, no. And a coping mechanism for me has always been, I need to get to know at least one person in this room really, really well, because then I've got a safety net.
Right. That makes sense. Yes.
Yeah, so I'll go into a room of brand new people and I'm like, right, need to talk to everyone to make sure, A, I know who they are, B, they know who I am, but also I need to suss out who I'm going to be best friends with straight away.
Yeah.
Because as soon as I've got someone in that room that I'm comfortable with, I will come out my shell to the rest of the people in that room. And I think the power of knowing that is what's got me to where I am and knowing what I can do.
Yeah.
So, it's been I think that's kind of my journey to right now.
Yeah. No, it's certainly a very powerful journey. There's been a lot going on there. And, of course, the really good thing is that you're now using all of that experience, everything that's happened, your understanding of what it's like in those situations. You're now creating, what would you call it, a movement to help other students in those sorts of situations.
I think legally, by HMRC, it'd be called a social enterprise. So we'll give them that one.
We'll go with it.
It is essentially a movement or a community. And that's somewhat why it's in the name and why it's kind of backing up the project that I'm currently running. Mm-hmm. So for me, I developed a support system over lockdown that really shone light on how business can help things and how coaching can help things and how mentoring and kind of that shared experience can fundamentally make much better opportunities for people.
So
I went away and I researched coaching and kind of looked at the different types of coaching, and some of them sounded a bit too fancy for me as a Bristolian that's a teacher. And I know, like, I technically wouldn't need to train to help people, mm-hmm. but I kind of wanted that, almost that layer of, right, Andrew, you've got this, so believe in yourself.
Yeah.
So I went and kind of looked into life coaching and the basics of NLP. So I have done some NLP basic training. A lot more that I would love to learn, but I'm all right with the basics right now. But I looked into life coaching, and obviously with my teaching, it lends so easily because it's the psychology of teaching, but with adults.
Amazing.
That's it. But then I sat there and realized, I was like, right, this isn't, I can't just do it one-on-one. I don't like the idea of kind of going to a student and be like, are you struggling? Like, give me your money and I'll do this for you. It didn't sit right, especially knowing that when I was a student, I probably had £50 a month, like, left after bills. I'm not taking that 50 quid off them. Like, it's just not. And I know, obviously, everyone's circumstances are different, but I fundamentally think it's a university responsibility. Mm-hmm. Because each student is paying $9,250 to be there if they're a UK student.
Yes, yes.
I know there's some leniencies for different nations in the UK, but generally speaking, it's $9,250. And if you're international, it's a lot more.
Excellent.
So university students are paying this much a year whilst also potentially getting into a lot of debt while they're there. Like, I will put my hands up and say, I am currently with student finance in 60K's worth of debt. That's Do I know when I'm going to pay? There's a fair amount.
Yeah.
And, like, you somewhat know that that's going to happen, and you know it's not really going to affect your credit score and whatnot because it's student debt. It's not normal debt. But that's one misconception that I want to clarify in the running of what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But I kind of thought, right, the university need to be the ones paying for this because it's their duty of care.
Yeah.
I worked it out that on a volume-based kind of thing, I wouldn't need that much from the university per student for that. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of developed it and I was like, right, I don't want to be on Facebook because I don't want it to just be a Facebook group. And I don't want just me talking to students, because that I feel is boring. Whether other people think talking, like me talking to them, is boring, I don't know. But to me, I would find that quite boring. Yeah. So I started like talking to other people and trying to gauge whether they'd be open to sharing their experiences, their knowledge, their expertise with students. Mm-hmm. So that became like the experts or the mentors in the community. And like, they're all lined up now, ready for this to really launch. And that's what we're doing at the moment, getting it ready. And then I had it all planned, and or I've planned it all out, and I've kind of spotted what I need to do, and I've got a platform for it now. So we've got a completely private and like GDPR safe platform that can't be shared outside of. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are limitations to not being able to stop someone screenshotting. Yeah, but again, the policies and stuff we have in place and kind of the confidentiality stuff when you onboard, mm-hmm, is there. So it means it's a safe place for students to share their feelings, their thoughts. But also, there's mentoring, coaching and workshops from people that have been there, done that, or experts in the area that I want to develop students in.
Yeah, yeah.
So I approached a university to do a pilot. Didn't tell them that there was a cost straight away, because at that point I didn't think there was going to be one. Mm-hmm. Then I realized how expensive things are. and I actually had a talking to, because I wasn't going to pay myself during it.
Very nice.
And then someone told me, like, you're going to be doing 40 to 60 hours of this every week. And I was like, yeah. So, so they were like, yeah, no, you need to charge for yourself as well. And I was like, okay, cool. Okay. don't like it, but okay. So I've priced it all up. And what's scary slightly is that to run this pilot for 4 months, it costs 75 grand. And that's numbers that I'm like, I wouldn't even earn that in a year as a teacher. And that's not just to pay me. Like, there's so much more that goes into it. There's at least 15 mentors. There's the workshops, the platform, the insurance. Like, there's so much going into it. And this is what I'm excited about, because I've got a passion. I've got a drive now to get this done, because it's not just for me. Like, I'm very non-monetary motivated, hence why I wasn't going to pay myself.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, as long as I can pay my bills, I'm comfy, I'm fine. which at the moment I can, but someone was like, you're going to be putting like blood, sweat and tears into this. You need to do something. So it pays for all of that, but it means that the university turned us down when we priced it. Mm-hmm. They said they can't pay into something that's a pilot like that. So I launched a crowdfunder, because when you can't find money and you don't have good credit to get a good financial like loan, and also I don't want a loan.
Not another one.
So I was like, right, well, this is a social kind of movement. This is helping the future of the workplace's employees, because these people will become employees. These students will develop and grow into business owners, employees for big companies, managing directors, CEOs. Like, yeah, these are the future.
Exactly. Yeah,
so
yeah.
In my mind, businesses and employers and all of that should be getting involved with this and kind of giving back to this future. But also from a parental view, like, and I hate to kind of use this, but the statistics at the moment is one student dies from suicide every 4 days.
Wow.
And
one every 4 days. That's
one every 4 days.
In the UK alone.
That's just in the UK.
Wow.
And between 2010 and 2019, 1,243 students took their life or registered at uni.
Yeah.
And it's like, those numbers don't, like, that, those, the 1,243 is from the Office of National Statistics, so it is supported. And everything I talk about is linked back to where I find it. Yeah. So it's all there. But to think that back when I was in uni, I almost joined that statistic.
Mm.
And people are like, well, why are you doing this? And I was like, that's why.
That's why, yeah, yeah.
Because if I can put the support in place to stop other people going through what I went through and stop that statistic from growing, but also you've got to look at the dropout statistics as well. So many people are getting so stressed out at university at the moment, they're dropping out. But they don't absolve the debt because they drop out. They've still got that debt.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not great. And I think if there was emotional, social and mental stability and growth at university, which I know universities don't have the time or resources to do because they have to focus on the academics, let's be honest. Like, the whole point of going to university at the moment is to get those academics and get those studies in to get your degree. And it is a tough thing. So I almost want to take the pressure off them and be like, I'll bring my team in and support.
Gotcha. And that's what you're creating here.
Yeah. So
where are you with that at the moment? It's at the fundraising stage, crowdfunding stage?
Or? So yeah, we're at the crowdfunding stage at the moment. Mm-hmm. We've got £1,000 towards our 75. Mm-hmm. The project title is called the University Support and Success Programme. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the whole thing. So we use the hashtag you have us, but with two S's.
Yeah, nice.
It's part of like my branding. Like I'm a branding kind of snob. I like everything to make sense. And I've just got new business cards and a Robler banner. I'm quite excited about it. We're at that stage. And this is like breaking news for any online platform. I have applied for Dragon's Den.
Ooh.
Yeah, so the application has gone in. Nice. I know that they film around May, June time.
Mm-hmm.
So fingers crossed I hear back soon. And if I'm in Manchester, say hello. but yeah, we're at that stage and we're getting through little steps and I'm looking at different investment as well, and I've got different people to talk to, but it's kind of getting that message out there. And even if people that have been to university see this and share their story, because whilst my story is unique to me, there are going to be factors of it that are universal.
Oh yes, yes.
And I think that's what I want to get across, is that my story is unique to me, but it isn't the only story like mine.
Yes, for sure. Wow. As I said in the introduction, when I was at university, I would genuinely have benefited from the sorts of thing which you're creating here, which is one of the reasons I wanted to get you on here, because this is something that's really valuable. I nearly became one of those statistics as well in my third year, so I completely understand where you're coming from with this, and it is going to be a vital thing for so many students. If people want to find out a bit more about you, a bit more about the university support and success program, all these sorts of things, maybe even get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to find out more or to get in touch?
So the best way to kind of find all of my stuff, because I like to be simple, is to just go to go.hyperlites, which is HYPERLITES, .co.uk. And that takes you through to my one page that has links to my YouTube, my WhatsApp, my Facebook, it's got everything.
Got everything. Like, brilliant.
You'll be spoiled for choice on that website. But yeah, it's then got a link to the donation page and my website in general.
Brilliant. So just to remind, that's go, as in G-O, .hyperlites, HYPERLITES. .co.uk, go.hyperlites.co.uk. You find all of the links, etc. there. Obviously, as always, all of the links are going to be in the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're catching this episode on my page, keithblakemorenoble.com/show. Look for the one with Andrew Porteous. You'll find all his links there. We'll also make a nice big prominent donate button there as well, so to make it easy for you to donate to the campaign. And whichever way you find Andrew and find his stuff and the USS, get involved. If you know of other people who might be able to help, it really is a very worthwhile long-term endeavor that Andrew's setting up here. And it could do much to help reduce the numbers of students who unfortunately end up taking their own lives, or not only those, but students who don't go that far but still get into really bad places mentally. Andrew, I know we could chat about this for a lot longer. I know we could, because we have before, and I know we will again. But time, as always, is marching on. Andrew, thank you so much for taking some time out to share your story, share your journey, and share how you're using that to help other people. Thank you so much for being with us, Andrew.
Thank you. It's been a brilliant first podcast, so I'm excited.
Oh, that's good. That's good. At least we haven't put you off podcasting, so that's always good. And dear listener, dear viewer, however you're catching this, whether it's on YouTube, on Apple, on Amazon, on Audible, Google, Spotify, wherever it is, thank you so much. Do give us a like, a share, a comment, a subscribe. The more of you that do that, the more we can create more of these things. Check out Patreon as well. I've got a Patreon channel. We get bonus content on there. It'll help us to keep bringing these sorts of people like Andrew to you. And where you do it, I'll catch you again the same time next week. And in the meantime, I'm going to leave you with Andrew's quote. It's a brilliant phrase. It's a wonderful one. Life can be lonely, but you have us.
Been listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show. To find out more, please visit keithblakemorenoble.com.